Everybody, what is going on? It is Crypto Bobby. Hope you are having a great day. Have a special guest for this edition of Crypto Happy Hour. I have Ovid, one of the co-founders of AirSwap. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And for anybody who is not familiar with your background, I would just love a very quick introduction as far as what you did professionally prior to the founding AirSwap and how you got into the blockchain cryptocurrency space in general.
Yeah, for sure. So my background, I guess I studied math in school, and then I decided that I wanted to go into a trading company, but I didn't want to go into like any normal trading company. I found computers really fascinating, and so I joined this small trade on Wall Street, but with computers, with algorithms. And that company was called Virtu Financial, and we grew it to like a massive powerhouse. I joined when it was 40 people. When we decided to expand it to Asia, I went over to Asia and was living in Sydney and Singapore for 2 years, built that operation out to a really successful business, which allowed us to IPO in 2015 for $2.5 billion.
Awesome.
After the IPO, I was like, kind of taking time off. And I met Joe Lubin and Consensus at a music festival. This was like in early 2016. And they taught me about Ethereum. And like at that point, I was just kind of hooked because I realized that with Ethereum, you could essentially rewrite all of finance peer-to-peer. And so that was kind of really inspiring to me.
Awesome. And for those who aren't familiar with AirSwap, what is it you're building right now at AirSwap? What's like the high level, like 60-second overview of what AirSwap is?
Yeah, so AirSwap is a decentralized global peer-to-peer trading network that we're building to trade ERC-20 tokens on the Ethereum network. It's basically designed with the blockchain in mind. So, kind of going back to my history, when I started to look at this space, I was like, it's blockchain, everything is decentralized. Why is everything trading on centralized exchanges? This was like in late 2016. And it's funny, you go on all the message boards and everyone's like, oh, we need a decentralized exchange. And around the time, I think some of the designs that had been proposed were like, MakerDAO had their own, I think it was called Oasis Dex, or they changed the name to Oasis Dex. And I was just like reading their architecture and, I traded on globally. Malcolm Gladwell says, if you do something for 10,000 hours, you have essentially mastered it. And trading and exchanges were kind of my bread and butter. And so I was just like, an exchange for blockchain. And that's kind of what where we came with AirSwap.
Absolutely. And so from my research and from, I think, a lot of what I've looked into the decentralized exchanges, there's kind of the concept of the protocol. So with AirSwap, there's the swap protocol, and there's some other decentralized exchanges that all have their own protocols. And then there's kind of the front end built kind of with that. And right now you have the AirSwap token trader, is that correct?
Correct.
So can you explain a little bit about the difference between like the protocol level and the actual token trader, kind of how that aligns and how that kind of comes together to actually build a decentralized exchange?
Yeah, so the token trader is the first version of our platform, and it's basically the peer protocol in action. So what we did is we specified a protocol. And one way to look at, protocol versus platform is that in the case of Google, what they do is they provide software, and any piece of hardware can basically integrate the Google software. Whereas Apple does a full stack solution, right? Apple basically provides hardware and the product. And we kind of decided to take the Apple approach, where we wanted to provide a full stack solution for people, fully integrated, everything from liquidity to the tech, to the tokens, to the marketplace. And also the regulatory environment. These are things that we decided that would be best handled by ourselves because we felt like we were experts in the space.
Sure. And so the token trader itself, that came out pretty recently. That's maybe in the past like two weeks or so, is that correct?
Yeah, it went on mainnet a couple weeks ago.
Gotcha. And what's kind of what's the process or like the kind of roadmap for that right now? Because I was using it a little bit before, and essentially you can trade wrapped ETH for AirSwap tokens. What's the what's kind of the future outlook looking like specifically for the token trader itself? Is there anything from a roadmap standpoint that you're looking to build into it or anything like that?
Yeah, so there's the roadmap of the token trader itself, and then the roadmap of the AirSwap platform
Sure.
itself. So token trader is basically we're working with a silent liquidity provider that has a certain of expectation what tokens are willing to trade and also what time they're willing to trade for. That can expand over the next couple weeks. Then the token trader is going to expand into the marketplace at some point in Q1 of 2018. So it should happen pretty soon. And at that point, we have a full marketplace where people can basically specify whatever tokens they want to trade, and anyone can come in and add or remove liquidity from that platform.
Absolutely. And when I'm kind of looking at building a decentralized exchange, like what type of I guess issues or challenges are there in regards to building and scaling a decentralized exchange? I know that's a lot of people in the space right now at least seem to be super excited about the opportunity of moving away from the centralized exchanges when you have the hacks with Coincheck and you have the BitGrail insolvency and all that type of stuff, all the negative things that have happened with these centralized exchanges in the past couple months, and then obviously historically speaking, Mt. Gox, Cripsy, all that type of thing. But what are the challenges specifically on your end as far as actually building a decentralized exchange that can compete with some of these centralized platforms?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the main benefits of the decentralized exchange is that you don't have to post your assets at the exchange. You're just basically trading wallet to wallet or peer to peer, which is super cool. So that's kind of the main benefit. I think the challenges people are going to run into, we're going to run into, are scalability. So we're kind of limited by the Ethereum network. Our solution to that is probably going to be driven by some sort of layer two solution,
Sure.
which is really, I think, easier to do in a peer-to-peer environment where, state channels is designed, they're designed for peer-to-peer. I think some of the regulatory challenges of this whole environment are going to be interesting. I think having a prudent and really good legal strategy, taking compliance very seriously, which we do. I think the regulatory landscape is going to evolve significantly over the
Totally.
next year or so. Trying to think of what other challenges. I think the other thing we want to get in is our cross-chain swaps. So we're kind of just staying in tune with what the tech community is working on, what people are working on, talking a lot of different projects. Yeah, I would say those are kind of the three, those are maybe a couple of those are in the short term. I would say, regulatory strategy is short term, scalability is medium term, and cross-chain is long term.
Absolutely. And from a regulatory perspective, I tweeted out yesterday about a couple questions, or 2 days ago maybe, and there was one person, Chris Alexander. So if you're watching, Chris, I appreciate it. But he had a couple good questions specifically, I think, regarding the recent SEC CFTC hearings, as far as how that might affect long-term strategy and how that might affect like the ERC-20 token inventory. Is that on your is that something that you're paying close attention to, kind of that the conversation that was occurring with the SEC and the CFTC? And then did anything perhaps that they say have some type of impact in terms of maybe the type of tokens that you can list in the future, or how that affects roadmap for AirSwap?
Yeah, so we're a decentralized platform, so we don't list tokens on our exchange, but people can basically post their intent to trade a certain token. I do think that the SEC statements were interesting. I think as SEC and CFTC, they both recognize the value of this technology, which is really cool for them to see. Even though they're maybe out of the age range, they were definitely respective of what young people are looking for. And just kind of side note, this is what people care about. This is the future. So regulators can come in and they can try to tamper it. But I mean, this is the future of
Totally.
not only technology, but basically everything. I think is going to have profound effects on society. The one thing that the SEC did do is they've made some broad statements, and those broad statements, I think, were intended to scare the lawyers. And I do think they successfully scared the lawyers. I've probably spoken to 8 to 10 different lawyers in the past 72 hours just to kind of get their temperature on the whole situation. Now, basically, like every blockchain lawyer in New York, I'm like kind of close with and talking to them, and But I think there is a still significant room to innovate in the space, and we'll continue to see through that, and we'll continue to follow the regulation and figure out the way forward for the blockchain community.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's funny because I remember a couple of those statements where it just seemed like they were directly pointed at lawyers and kind of scolding anybody that's had any level of advisement on ICOs. And yeah, that's
Right.
it was kind of funny, but a little bit scary at the same time because I'm
Still
sure.
scary, definitely intentional.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So 1.2, as far as AirSwap goes, the protocol and the token trader, and you had alluded to it a little bit previously, but starting off with ERC-20 tokens, then you had said evaluating cross-chain atomic swaps, those type of technologies as they develop. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's something that a lot of people find fascinating is so many of these decentralized exchanges right now are built specifically for ERC-20 tokens because it obviously the tech aligns, but there are maybe a lot of opportunities from a cross-chain standpoint. Can you talk about maybe how that evaluation is looking or any interesting things you see there?
Yeah, I mean, I think like in the short term, what can be done, because if you look at Binance or any of these other centralized exchanges, and you're kind of trying to analyze what volume where the demand is, it seems like a lot of it is on the BTC crosses. So I would try to get Bitcoin into the ecosystem. I think one kind of cool idea that I threw by the Chainlink guys is to have wrapped BTC on the Ethereum network. And basically the way you would do it is you would have their Oracle mechanism verify that the BTC is sitting in a Bitcoin multisig, that they can't, I'm not sure about all the attack vectors, but getting a wrapped BTC into an ERC-20 token would be pretty awesome.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think it's possible. You just gotta maybe encourage some of the projects to encourage Chainlink. So maybe I'll spend some time on that in the near future.
Yeah, that's. I know there's a lot of people that watch, and I've talked about Chainlink in the past a little bit too. And there's a lot of people that I interact with that are pretty positive on Chainlink in the long term, and it seems like a project that's got a lot behind it. So it's cool to hear that, and I think the wrap BTC idea is pretty interesting. Maybe one thing we could touch on as well is the difference between just ETH and wrapped ETH. I know that's something you have to use with the AirSwap token trader. If you're using some of these other decentralized exchanges like a Radar Relay or something else like that, you have to kind of use this element of a wrapped Ethereum. Can you talk what that is and why that's useful as well?
Yeah, so I'll do my best. I think the best way to figure this out is to check out what the Radar Relay guys put together, which is weth.io. Go to that
Okay,
website.
cool.
But basically, the idea of wrapped ETH is to act like an ERC-20 token. So you can call the transfer function and other functions that are afforded by the ERC-20 methodology. But basically, you can't use all the functionality in just the ETH. Unit of value. You need to basically tokenize it in order to basically allow it to interact like other ERC-20 tokens.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I've just used it, and I haven't really cared too much to actually figure out what the wrapped ETH was. It just every kind of time I use a decentralized exchange, it might have that element of it, and I'll just kind of go through that process of trading the ETH for wrapped ETH. One thing that when I'm looking at just the overall landscape, there's a number of different decentralized exchanges out there, and I think probably the one that most people are familiar with has been Ether Delta in the past, just because it's had so many tokens listed and maybe been the one with the most volume and places where people have gone to try to get ERC-20 tokens before they hit the big exchanges or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about how AirSwap fundamentally differs? Because I know each between like 0x, between Kyber Network, between Ether Delta, they all have a kind of a slightly different flavor as far as how they're technically set up. Can you talk a little bit about the differences of how AirSwap is approaching things in terms of the other decentralized exchanges?
Yeah, of course. And this is the really cool thing about the space is that you have all these projects with different designs trying to solve, ultimately the same problem, which is how do we get towards a decentralized trading environment? So it's really inspiring to see. Basically, the key features of ours are we're basically strictly peer-to-peer. So orders are passed central party, which in most cases is an order book. So an order book is basically a list of bids and offers where you can see public pricing of where you can trade. In our case, the prices are passed peer-to-peer, so they're passed. But in this network where everything is dark, where you can't see the other peers, you have to have a way of finding where other people exist and who's willing to trade what. And so that's where the indexer comes in. The indexer is essentially our search engine, our Google for ERC-20 tokens that allows you to find and connect to these counterparties. And then past that point, you're going to be communicating the prices directly peer-to-peer.
Sure. And when you talk about kind of peer-to-peer versus actually on blockchain order books like in EtherDelta or like some of these other approaches out there, can you talk a little bit about the on blockchain order books and some of the, because they sound great in theory, but there's also a lot of significant drawbacks, at least in my opinion, to an on blockchain order book. Can you talk a little bit on that?
So, more generally, I just have the view that order books were designed for centralized trading environments because they're basically a location where all the liquidity sits in one place, and that's by design, right? You want all of the orders to be placed in one place so that if someone's coming to trade, they basically have all the liquidity in one place. And generally, in classic markets and classic electronic markets, all these order books are located on one central server, one computer, one node. In the case of blockchain, you have a distributed environment, right? So you have all the different nodes on the network are distributed. And so trying to distribute an order book, trying to distribute a central source of truth, it becomes a lot more difficult. And I think a lot of the designs, while they're cool and they pull a lot of the old themes, I think that they might rely a little bit too heavily on the centralized design.
Sure. And as I'm looking at a lot of these decentralized exchange projects and platforms, and even just kind of some of the discussion around, I've had a couple of conversations with some people that are trying to build different like APIs across exchanges and things like that. Can you talk maybe on the perspective as somebody with a background in a traditional finance or at least more traditional finance than the
It's
crypto?
funny that it's considered traditional now. It's funny.
Yeah, probably coming
Yeah.
from the actual finance world, maybe it wasn't considered traditional, but now it's definitely traditional.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how big Virtu became, a startup. We were hacking away and trying to remove the banks from the equation. And we did. But now people are probably trying to hack away and remove us from the equation, so.
That's funny. And they Virtu Financial had a nice week or two, and with all the craziness that went on, I think recently they crushed that whole little downturn of volatility action.
Yeah, I mean, I think that business model exceeds when there's a lot of volume and volatility. So that I mean, most traders like volume and volatility.
For sure. Kind of getting back to, I got lost in myself with that question, but got lost on that one. But as far as like the infrastructure between what's available for like traditional finance or more traditional finance and what's available in the crypto markets, that's something I keep hearing from somebody whose my background is more in just kind of general tech than it is really in the traditional finance market. So I don't really have a great comparison as far as like what the massive differences are between what professional traders or what professional like market makers have access to versus what is available in crypto. Can you talk a bit about some of like the main differences from like an infrastructure standpoint that people see? Because that seems to be a weak point that a lot of individuals say, hey, big investors are coming in, it's just the infrastructure's not there yet.
Totally. And there's a number of layers to this, so I'm just gonna talk, and then
Yeah, talk away.
First kind of funny story. So I went by Virtu a few months ago, and I was just going around and talking to the guys, and I was talking to the head trader, and I was like, hey, what do you think of crypto? And he looked at me in the eye and he said, would you trade on any of those exchanges? And so kind of coming from that perspective, they basically just don't want to touch any of these exchanges. They don't want to deposit their money there. The centralized exchanges in crypto are more centralized than the centralized exchanges on Wall Street because they hold your funds. In the cases of Wall Street, you're basically like giving up your positions at the end of the day, and you're only moving it on the clearing date. You're only actually paying for it, T+2 or whatever. So there's the infrastructure as far, and I come from the perspective of automated trading. So I think about everything in terms of algos, and so you need really good APIs. And you need really good systems in order to process a lot of messages, in order to process them synchronously, in order to decide with fairness also which orders get executed and which don't get executed. That is a highly regulated event in classic financial markets. And a lot of these players that are trying to get into crypto, and by the way, the hedge funds are definitely trying to get into crypto. Like we have conversations with people every day. They're looking at this stuff. It's like Novogratz says, the herd is coming. I mean, it's just amazing the people that we're talking to, and just like trying to understand the space, basically. But yeah, so it's a sh exchange infrastructure. It's also the regulatory environment around these exchanges. I think they just don't, they're not gonna come in and just rely on the exchange not to front run them. They need a little bit more of a guarantee than that. The other thing is custody. I think that having in crypto, all of us crypto users, we're used to just holding our crypto on our private keys or whatever. They're not used to that, right? They're used to basically relying on a broker to clear everything for them, to have this layer in the middle. So I'm not or middlemen in the system, because I love not having middlemen in the system. But I do think that for certain parties to get in, there's going to have to be good custody solutions.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine somebody at a Wall Street bank popping a ledger into a USB and
I mean,
it's not happening.
no, but I think the ledger blew, and you were talking to Tomas from Ledger, and he was basically saying that product is built for institutions, for them to have a little more confidence in the system.
Awesome. And one thing that I have like probably lighter understanding on, it gets talked about quite a bit, is liquidity in the sense of exchanges. And I know one of the big I think kind of positive points of AirSwap is having that single global point of liquidity. Can you talk about why liquidity matters on in cryptocurrency in general, and then specifically with decentralized exchanges, what liquidity kind of really means in general, and why that matters and is a big value add specifically?
Yeah, so from the end user, liquidity is just basically going to look like, anyone out there who's going on an exchange and they're looking at it, you just want to see a lot of prices. You want to see a lot of prices and a lot of depth, a lot of size on those prices. So basically what that tells you is that when you trade, you're not going to get a shitty price, essentially. You want people to you want the users in your platform to be able to, at least with some guarantee, know that they're getting good prices. So liquidity, without liquidity, you don't have an exchange. And people who generally will provide liquidity are market makers. Market makers are people that provide continuous bids and asks to a system. When you get more market makers, you get competition between those market makers, the spreads decrease, and then you have a liquid market. This is something that I think our team is very good at. Maybe primarily because I was a market maker for, however many years, and so I can communicate with these guys. I basically, there's a little bit of a hand-holding process, especially in a decentralized trading environment, because you're not just connecting to an API and they're handling all the funds for you. You're actually signing transactions yourself. You're trading with your wallet against someone else's wallet. So the APIs look a little bit different. The message passing looks a little bit different. So there's a little bit of a new educational curve that we have to go through. I do think that have an advantage. I think that we do have very good liquidity providers already lined up, and we're super excited to finally open up the system and allow people to trade.
Sure. And a question kind of on top of that, as far as market makers and like the automation behind it, how automated of a process is it, or can it be for them? Is that something like you had indicated? I know the APIs are a little bit different, but is that something from their standpoint that they can make fairly automated, or is that still more because of the decentralized nature, more of a manual process than traditionally speaking?
Totally, it's totally automated. I have a very biased view, but I think correct view that all market makers are automated at this point. If you look at U.S. equity markets, 90% of the volume now are done by algos. So I think that trend will just continue into crypto, and if it doesn't, it'll change into that very quickly. So I think the design has to be designed for. And ultimately, what that results is you get good liquidity on the platform, then people are coming into the platform, they have good prices to trade against.
Sure. And with the AirSwap token itself, one of the, I guess, interesting things to discuss is how that's used within the actual ecosystem. What's the purpose utility-wise for the AirSwap token, and how is that utilized on the kind of on the platform?
Yeah, of course. So, with any exchange, you have to introduce some point of friction, and so we decided not to put fees on any trade. So, AirSwap is a no-fee environment. The reason why we did that is because in a peer-to-peer trade, the second you insert a third party into that peer, extracting value out of it, it's automatically not a peer-to-peer trade in our eyes. So, however, there is a centralized component which is called the indexer. The indexer is your location where people can discover each other. And in our case, the AirSwap token has to be held and locked in order to publish to the indexer. So, one of the analogies I like to draw is, let's say you want to go on eBay and you want to just buy something, you can just buy it, right? It's no problem. But let's say you want to publish your item on eBay, you most likely are going to have to face some other levels of friction. And so we've introduced a level of friction, I think, in the most clean way possible in our design.
Absolutely. And one thing from the standpoint of a lot of these decentralized exchanges is, yes, it reduces the, I guess, the risk or some of the risk in regards to trusting a centralized company or organization to hold your funds. But in a lot of ways, you're also kind of trusting maybe a third party to actually write a functional smart contract. And maybe in my mind, that's probably the biggest. Maybe one, I don't know. Maybe could you talk a little bit about the kind of the element of smart contracts when it comes to decentralized exchanges? Is that a potential area of vulnerability if they're not properly, properly produced or properly engineered?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's like the kind of scary thing about trading on a in a blockchain environment is the once you trade, it's immutable, right? You can't undo it. That's kind of why these attacks are such a big deal. You just have to have the highest standards with your code, both internally, and then you have to publish bug bounties. You have to have external audit. I mean, we have Phil Dayan, who's a researcher at IC3. He comes in. And he'll audit everything along with a couple other people that we do privately. And once we're ready, we'll publish it and have a bug bounty. So we provide, financial incentives for people to find bugs, and sometimes they do. That's, you just create a market around it, and you hopefully fix all those things before you actually deploy the smart contract. But I agree with you. I mean, the standards need to be extremely high, because otherwise you're left out in the dust.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's to me that seems like really from like a vulnerability perspective outside of maybe like a DNS attack, which I think happened Ether Delta after I think Ether Delta was sold at some point in the past month or two. I think that
Yeah,
changed
Zach sells
hands.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think right after that happened, I think there was a DNS attack, and that seems like the only way outside of basically just going to the wrong website that because if you're plugging your ledger in or something like that, then there's really not, they're not holding or decentralized exchange isn't holding your funds. So the areas there are minimal, but for the most part, people are just trusting, blatantly trusting or hoping that the smart contracts actually work.
Yeah, we need a decentralized DNS solution, which will probably exist at some point. The other thing is you can download Chrome plugins. I forgot what it's called at the moment, but those would basically verify that you're looking at the right website. I think this is a problem that people face with MyEtherWallet wallet pretty frequently. People are trying to create fake MyEtherWallet wallet websites. So yeah, I mean, relying on the internet on the front end is not a fail-safe solution,
No, definitely
unfortunately.
not. So one thing I'm just kind of looking at some of the some of the notes in general I put in. But as far as right now goes with the token trader, so I think that there's an active hours for trading tokens. I think it's between 10 a.m. right now and 4 p.m. Eastern time on the weekdays. As far as that goes, is there a specific reason there that you have like actively traded hours right now? And is that going to be a permanent thing for Token Trader for AirSwap, or is that just kind of more while you're in this beta phase, I would say?
Definitely gonna be 24 hours, at least in the medium term, hopefully in the short term. But it's kind of up to our liquidity providers as to what they want, what they're willing to do. I think that when I think that they're just working on a couple more things, and then we'll roll that out to 24 hours pretty soon,
Cool.
and more tokens.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe from a time range perspective, when you're looking at adding tokens, is that just building that into the actual token trader is that kind of building that functionality in or testing it out? What's the process like to add more tokens outside of ETH and AirSwap right now into Token Trader? Is there a specific a process your team is going through to do that now?
Well, so I guess from our perspective, we're kind of agnostic to what the ERC20 tokens trade on the platform.
Sure.
I think it's mostly up to the peers that want to trade them.
Okay, absolutely. And from the standpoint of AirSwap, so your team is probably, I mean, at least from in my opinion, and then just from a lot of the people I've spoken to, one of the more impressive teams out there in terms of the backgrounds that you come from and the level of experience that you bring to the table. Can you talk just a bit about the team you've assembled and how how you might be growing in the future to kind of meet the demands that you foresee with AirSwap and the swap protocol as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, it comes from the culture of the company. We're just trying to hire the best people. We just want to create, a family and have, some just really incredible talent across the board, whatever role they assume. I mean, first of all, like Don's a visionary and product designer. He's really incredible person, designer, and everything you see that's going to be public from us is going to be very usable and very beautiful. I'm not going to have it any other way. And then that extends down to all the engineers we've hired, really incredible people, also incredible engineers, but also incredible people. Sam on our team is an old, he comes from the old world primarily, but that's really good because we got to talk to these guys and we got to convince them to come on the platform. It's super valuable to us. And then obviously the advisory board we put together is world class. I mean, and everyone from Joe Lubin to Novogratz, to Bill Tai, to the former chief scientist of Israel. These are all all stars that when we pick up the phone and we need some help, they'll help us.
Awesome.
So really, I think the philosophy is, and the, I think this a lot of my experience at Virtu is, that culture was very strong, and is really the culture of the company that you build is, gonna carry you in the long term.
For sure. Yeah, it's been awesome to see kind of your team grow, and I've definitely been watching AirSwap for a while, so that's been really cool. From the
Or
standpoint
since
of
I think since you've seen too, so we'll probably release those new team member or announce the new team members pretty soon.
That's awesome. Awesome. Going to one of your advisors, so Joe Lubin, who is one of the founders of Consensys, and I think your background, like you said, you had kind of gotten into the blockchain crypto world through Joe Lubin, and then I think were you an entrepreneur in residence at Consensys as well for a while? Or
Yeah, I mean, I
something like
didn't.
that.
I was just kind of hanging out, to be honest. They're just that Joe has a decentralized organization approach, and so he just, if you just like, yeah, just come hang out. So I hung out.
Yeah, so that's yeah. Kind of that was part of the maybe question I was going to ask is if you could talk a little bit about like what the Consensys team is doing there, because there's so many interesting projects and companies like, projects like AirSwap and other ones that have kind of spun up out of the Consensus umbrella. And they've, developed so much goodwill, I think, for the Ethereum community. And there have been so many incredible companies that have been able to leverage that. So as somebody who has that close experience, I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts about what Consensus is doing and kind of how they might be adding value to the Ethereum ecosystem as well.
Yeah, of course. If I were to tell you that I knew what everyone at Consensus was doing, that would be a lie, because there's 600 people there, and it's growing like crazy every day. It's just basically they're tackling everything. I think that the really cool projects there are a lot of really cool projects. My favorite ones are the infrastructure projects like Infura and MetaMask and Truffle. These are things that developers and end users are using. When you look at MetaMask, they now have 1 million downloads.
Just
really incredible.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so these types of things are going to drive adoption of Ethereum, right? And they're not, they're not collecting fees or anything like that. So, I think Joe is a visionary, and he was very, he understood the power of Ethereum very early on, but also knew that in order for this thing to succeed, it needed a lot of support around it. Whether or not all the projects are successful monetarily, it doesn't really matter. It's just pulling developers into the space, educating them, just getting the ecosystem to grow, because that makes the pie bigger for everyone.
Sure. Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch. And I think that's like, somebody tweeted about this the other day, just as far as like the Ethereum developer community. And I know there's a lot of quote unquote Ethereum killers out there and competitors that are trying to maybe take part of that general platform play pie. But just the level of development and kind of knowledge base around Ethereum, I think, is going to be tough for a lot of these other platforms maybe to overcome in the long run.
Totally, yeah. Ethereum has the mind share, it has the developers, it has the entrepreneurs. It's really the platform to beat right now.
Yeah.
They do need to figure out scalability. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, and to that point too, so I've had some conversations with other individuals that are creating projects based on Ethereum. I'd love to hear your take as far as scalability. I know you mentioned it previously as maybe leveraging some type of layer two solution. Can you talk a little bit about Ethereum scalability and what you think maybe their best chances are right now to kind of improve upon that and how your outlook is there?
Yeah, I mean, with a linear blockchain is a linear data structure.
Sure.
Scalability becomes a problem. You're limited by the time of the blocks. So sharding kind of mitigates that by allowing you to break up the chain of the tree into different basically sections, and to only have to verify that section. I don't totally understand the technical intricacies of sharding. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for Casper, obviously. I think the kind of layer two solutions are going to be really popular, state channels and then also Plasma that the OmisaGo guys are working on. Mm-hmm. I used to say scalability was the $100 billion question in blockchain. I used to say this, and then now there are multiple chains worth $100 billion. So that statement became outdated. But I think it is the most important thing, technology to really proliferate into society, which, I mean, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. It's interesting because I guess, probably a year or so ago, you might not think that, hey, it's that urgent. And now we've just gotten to the point where, whether it's scalability on Bitcoin, scalability on Ethereum, not really much else, but I mean, those are just the two most popular projects right now that are really running into those barriers. And it's just because there's actually been a high degree of adoption. So it's been pretty fascinating to watch that pan out. And there's so many entrepreneurs kind of like yourself that are building these incredible kind of ambitious projects that are leveraging something like Ethereum. So it's going to be cool to watch that pan out. And I'm kind of the opinion that hoping that ETH can, Ethereum can scale effectively.
Oh yeah, I love Ethereum and I believe in it, and I believe in the developer community, and I think it'll happen.
Absolutely. One question outside of AirSwap, outside of Ethereum, are there any specific projects?
Sorry, I lost you a little bit
there. Outside of AirSwap and maybe outside of Ethereum, are there any specific projects or use cases that you feel really excited about in the blockchain or crypto space right now? Is there anything that you just find either super exciting or fascinating or maybe beneficial?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there's a couple different things that I think, one of them is for social good and one of them is for more, just taking technology to this, to the next level. So for social good, I mean, I think, having an identity solution on the blockchain is going to provide tremendous, social benefit, because if you think about it, who controls your identity? It's the government. And in the case of the US, that's probably fine. We don't need to totally worry about anything terrible happening. But if you're in some country where there aren't human rights, I mean, you can essentially be wiped off the map. So being able to have a identity solution that's trusted globally, I think will provide tremendous social good, and I'm super excited for that. And then as far as like the more on the more financial side or the more trading side, I think that what everyone's talking about right now, working on, see a lot of projects popping up in New York, is the tokenizing real world assets play. Is trying to figure out how do we take assets from the real world and put them onto a blockchain. And I think that that's every I think every type of asset in the world is going to be, on a blockchain and tradable at some point.
Absolutely. Oh, that's funny. So maybe we could take a few, I think we have like 10 minutes or so left now. Maybe we could take a few questions on the from the audience here. Somebody's saying I didn't pay my internet bills. I actually did, so I appreciate that, but I'll pop through here to see if I can find any questions that might be solid. So if you guys can post if you have any specific questions here that you might be interested from. Okay, so we got a good one. I appreciate that, Hari. As far as how long you think it might take for decentralized exchanges to go mainstream, is there any like timeline or roadmap where you think that might happen?
I mean, I think 2018 is the year of the DEX. I think that this year is going to be the super exciting for all these platforms that come live and start to take liquidity from centralized exchanges to decentralized exchanges. So, I think it's I think it's over the next 6 months we're going to start to see liquidity migrate. As far as mainstream goes, are we talking about, grandma using decentralized exchanges? It might be a couple years away, but I'm hopeful.
Let's have grandma figure out how to use
Exactly. And then
Coinbase
ship the, yeah, so.
first. So looking at looking at some more of these questions here. As far as maybe so I guess there's some of these other seeing some other questions as far as some of the other exchanges out there like maybe Bitfinex and there's some other larger centralized exchanges like Binance that are saying they're going to add some level of decentralization. Do you view that as maybe competitive to what you're trying to do, or because they have an existing element of centralization, is that not so much in comparison to some of the other protocols that are already in existence?
Well, so I think that there's kind of like the order book model and then the non-order book model. So I do think we kind of sit in a league of our own where we're probably the only decentralized exchange without an order book. And I mean, I guess Kyber, they're also peer-to-peer, but they're doing on-chain and they allow different prices theoretically.
Sure.
As far as competing with order books, I think that the liquidity type that will come through our platform will be slightly different. And as far as competing with, I think that thing that Loy Lu said once that I really liked was that the competition for decentralized exchanges are the centralized exchanges. It's getting the liquidity off of decentralized exchanges into decentralized trading environment. So to the extent that these centralized exchanges want to move their liquidity to a decentralized trading environment, I think it's good for the community. I'm
Totally.
happy. That's the mission here. So.
Absolutely. And from the standpoint, and this was a question I think I forgot to ask previously, but I'll pose it now. As far as your like target market or target participant with AirSwap, Is that more on the institutional side, kind of the larger scale traders, or maybe some of the more like sophisticated investors, and maybe not as much like the just kind of the standard end user, somebody like myself that might be going on to like a Binance or to an Ether Delta or something like that to conduct small trades? Can you talk a little bit about maybe who AirSwap is mostly geared for from a trading perspective?
Yeah, I mean, so basically we're going after everyone. I think that this environment will support both institutional and retail players. I think the two types of liquidity we can focus on are kind of bigger orders. So that's in the case of classic markets, a lot of these big orders when people are trying to push through, trying to trade a big amount of size. You can't do that in an order book because you're going to just drive the price down. So you want to like basically privately place it. And that's what our platform allows for. It allows for private communication of orders and placement. The other kind of market that we're structuring our platform after are the FX markets. FX, for the most part, trade not on order books. They trade in peer-to-peer trading environments. And so that ends up being a lot of retail users. It ends up being institutions trading with retail users. And I think that's a model that we follow very closely. And I think we're going to be able to go after that liquidity type as well.
Sure. One thing I'm seeing pop up more and more of, and I think there was even like an ICO the other day, or a private pre-sale ICO or something that went down, that was a dark pool, or kind of tokenizing a dark pool, is the concept of kind of like you had talked a little bit about placing a large order on the order book. Obviously, that'll impact the price significantly if it's substantial enough. Doing that in a peer-to-peer approach won't. Is that similar in concept to like what a dark pool provides? Is that almost in theory kind of the same thing? Can you talk? I think some people have been asking a lot of questions as far as like what the heck is a dark pool, and is this stuff bad? Is it nefarious and all that type of thing?
Right, so a dark pool is basically an exchange, an order book that doesn't have market data. So you cannot see what prices are being posted to the dark pool. The reason why certain parties don't want that is because the second they show their size, that'll tip the market and it may cause the price to move. So maybe better for certain parties. It's just an economic thing. It's like it's some parties just want to trade in an exchange, fine. Some parties don't want to actually reveal their hand, so they prefer to trade in a dark pool. I don't think it is nefarious. I think it's just supporting a different liquidity type. Although the fact that it is dark, and it has the dark black, it has that kind of
Scary.
feeling to it. Yeah, it's a little scary. But no, I mean, I think dark pools are huge in the US and international markets, and for good reason.
Sure. So one question just came in from somebody out there, so I appreciate that. They mentioned, will users have to keep their hardware wallets constantly connected? So maybe in the case of having your ledger connected to Token Trader, is that something that you're going to have constantly connected in order to, I guess the reference here is to day trade, but I guess we can remove the kind of day trade out of it and just will you need that ledger constantly connected to execute trades, or is that something that you can not have plugged in at all times?
Well, the idea is that you want to store your private keys locally,
Sure.
so you don't want to deposit the money in the exchange or anything. So whether you do it on MetaMask or whether you do it on Ledger is kind of up to you. I recommend Ledger. And so in order to sign transactions, in order to execute transactions, yes, you do have to have access to your private keys, and that's by design. I think we want that. We don't want a system where the private keys are being held elsewhere.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think kind of with that question being concerned, leaving that on there is kind of defeats the purpose of a decentralized exchange in a lot of respects, because then you would be trusting AirSwap or anybody else with those tokens, which is kind of the total opposite of what
Yeah,
we'd be
totally.
trying to do here.
Exactly.
And I'm looking here, so I'll probably take maybe one more question here. So I'm gonna try and scroll through, see if we get one more question here for Oved. So let's see. Trying to see if I get one more good one that is not Wen Moon or something about. So this is an interesting question, I guess, from Zach Snyder. Appreciate this, Zach. Do you think the strategy to increase adoption rate for decentralized exchange users Is your maybe adoption strategy similar to something like a 0x or a Kyber? Are you approaching adoption in because of the maybe technical differences of your protocols and kind of how you're approaching the problem of a decentralized exchange? Is your user adoption strategy a little bit different in nature from something like a 0x or something like a Kyber?
Yeah, so I guess the 0x they would want relayers to implement their protocol, and so and then the relayers themselves would have to go out and try to get user adoption
Sure.
through whatever marketing channels. In the case of Kyber or AirSwap, we are providing fully integrated platforms, trading platforms, and so in our the user acquisition strategies might be different, but I think that happens at the platform layer and probably. I think each project is going to have different markets that they focus on, and different people that they focus on ultimately.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think that was probably a pretty solid question to leave off on in terms of the audience questions. But is there anything perhaps that I missed out on that I didn't cover from a question standpoint, or anything you'd like to leave off with for all the people that are watching right now?
I think we did a pretty good job of covering the
Yeah.
platform, and thank you for asking all those questions. Really awesome. Just want to say thanks to all the fans. Thank you to my team. And we're super excited for 2018. We're super excited to bring everyone together, and to move this decentralized environment forward.
Well, I really appreciate the time. I know, kind of talking previously a little bit, how swamped anybody in your position is probably. So I really appreciate you taking a full hour with us here. Sorry for those technical difficulties at the 45-minute mark or wherever that was for everybody watching. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about AirSwap, and then also just your general thoughts on the blockchain, the current blockchain ecosystem. So I really do appreciate that. And thank you to everybody who's watching. Sorry if I missed any questions. I'll have a video later today as well, so keep an eye out for that. But I hope you guys all have an awesome day, and thanks again, Oved. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.